Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What is up, LAFB fans? Will Decker, your host from the Bruin Bible, and draft is in session. We are here to talk about Bet Online and the good people behind the brand. Football season is officially back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all your football betting needs this season. You'll find the latest odds, matchup info, player needs, and game trends. And as your continued source for all sports wagering info, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, live scores, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events like MLB, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code LAFB to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. Welcome to another edition of the Bruin Bible. Your host, Will Decker, and your co-host, Jamal Madney, in the house. A little somber, you know, after this UCLA loss, but UCLA fans, all is not lost on this year, despite a heartbreaking loss up in Eugene this past weekend, a 45-30 throttling. And Madman, there's no other nice way to say it. We got our asses kicked, you know, pretty thoroughly, you know, at Outzen this past weekend. Madman, how are we taking the loss?
Well, you know, I think it's important before we even talk about the game and the specifics and what led to the loss. I think it's important to zoom out and take the bigger picture. You know, first and foremost, many individuals thought over the course of this three-game stretch of top 15 competition, three consecutive, that UCLA was going to go maybe 1-2, maybe 0-3, depending on how the perspective was after that South Alabama performance. And so if you had told any Bruin fan that this team would go 2-1 in that stretch, with the only loss being to Oregon on the road, a top 10 Oregon team, that is a very serious conference title contender, we would all have taken that. I think that no one really thought credibly that this team would be able to go undefeated for the season. And so obviously the goals of Pac-12 championship, Rose Bowl championship, single season victories in terms of a school record of exceeding that 10-win threshold, all still very much in play. And if the Bruins take care of business over the next five regular season games, absolutely this team is going to be back in the Pac-12 championship game, most probably with a rematch against these Oregon Ducks. So before we even talk game, Thriller, it's important to sort of zoom out and have that perspective that not only is not all lost, you can make an argument that very little was lost in terms of the significance of this season. Everything the Bruins want to play for, everything that DTR wanted to come back for and Zach Charbonnet wanted to come back for, and everything we thought that the zenith of this team could be with Chip Kelly is still very much in play. So it's important to take that perspective moving forward before we dive into the therapy session.
Yes, and perspective is everything, because I remember going back, talking to you, just looking at the opponents ahead. And in my mind, I'm like, if we could just win one of those three games and beat USC, you know, we're at 10 wins. That was the goal for this year. That was my prediction coming into the year. So to take two of those three, especially the Utah win, there is still so much to play for, Bruins fans. So, you know, tough one. We're going to get into it. But a lot to be still happy about and excited about. We need the Rose Bowl rocking on Saturday evening when the Stanford Cardinal come to town. So let's pack the Rose Bowl once again, you know, in terms of getting this end of the season run ahead of us. But where we have to start with this game, Madman, the only place we really can start is the defensive side of the football. And it was a mess, you know, and just to put it in perspective, Oregon almost had 560 yards of total offense. The key stat for me was UCLA could just not get them off the field. You know, they were 6 of 10 on third downs, and three of those third downs are
turned into fourth downs where they converted. So they were like 9 of 10 essentially in converting on, you know, third and fourth down situations. The only punt coming late in the fourth quarter when the game was out of reach. Madman, give me your thoughts on the defense, because I think from every level, you know, the defensive line got manhandled. The pass coverage was abysmal. You know, the tackling was suspect, to say the least. Give me your thoughts on the defense, because there's a lot to improve going forward, and I think the Bruins are going to take that as a challenge as we move down the stretch in the season.
Will, a couple of things just to sort of shape the perspective there. I've never seen a game before in all my years of watching college football where there were zero stops in the game with 10 minutes to go in the game, and UCLA was down by 22. UCLA scored on every possession they had at the 10-minute mark of the fourth quarter, and were down by 3 touchdowns. That tells you sort of all you need to know in terms of the state of the defense. And I think another very symbolic moment will happen the last possession of the game, because it sort of captured the essence of UCLA's defensive day. Oregon obviously trying to salt the game away. 3rd and 2, they run a play. They get a first down. Oh, by the way, it's called back, false start. It becomes 3rd and 7. 3rd and 7, Oregon runs a play. They get a first down. Oh, by the way, it's holding. 3rd and 17. Let's do it again. 3rd and 17, they get 18 for the first down. Down, distance, 4th down, 3rd down. Nothing seemed to matter defensively. And I think that's where we have to begin. For me, Will, you have to be able to take something away from an elite offense. And when you look at the type of day that Oregon had, 46 carries, north of 260 yards rushing, they averaged over 6 yards a carry, and Bo Nix got the opportunity to go above 75% completion for 283 yards and 5 touchdowns. So both of those things happened, and the defense looked inept at times. They looked very tentative at times. I think in terms of the three key matchups, from a defensive line perspective, Oregon's experience really came through, and that they won that matchup significantly over the course of the Bruin defensive line and really put the secondary into some tough spots. Our man Devin Kirkwood had a tough day with Franklin on some of those plays, and then Franklin made some exceptional catches, just, you know, the one down the sideline and what have you. But where I have to begin the diagnosis with the defense, Will, is in the linebacking unit. And that was the group, Latu, Vaughns, and Carl Jones Jr., that were lost in no man's land. And for me, if I'm Bill McGovern, that's where how you sort of fix this situation, knowing that there's a high likelihood of playing Oregon again, knowing that there's a very explosive USC team on the horizon. What do I do with these three linebackers, Will? And I think that what he needed to do was either have those three commit to be in the box and stopping the run and containing the run, and then playing Russian roulette on the back end and saying, look, you know, we can't stop everything, but we're going to contain the run. That's the bread and butter of Oregon's offensive attack. Really keep Bo Nix contained in the pocket and really control that running game. And then whatever happens on the back end happens. We may win some, we may lose some. We're willing to live with that. Or say, okay, I'm really going to adopt my Tampa 2 type of defense, sag those linebackers back in coverage, drop 7 back, and then say, okay, we're going to force Oregon to dink and dump their way down the field, and eventually we're going to be opportunistic with the turnover, or we're playing the probability game where Oregon will have a penalty, and we back them up, we tighten up in the red zone, and we generate enough stops that way. The reality was, he didn't either. And that was the problem. And I think moving forward, he's really going to have to see what he needs to do with that linebacking crew. For as great as they've been, Latu had a very tough day on that very second possession that Oregon had. Well, Latu with that inside rush, lost edge containment, lost edge integrity, allowed Bo Nix to get that first down. On Oregon's third possession, John Vaughns had Nix, you know, on that 3rd and 11, and Nix was only at about a 6-yard gain, misses that tackle, allows Oregon to get the first down. So I think for me, it was a struggle all the way around, but I really start to focus on how do I play my very good linebackers in taking something away? Because I got to take something away. I can't, it's like a great NBA team, right? You're basically saying, look, we're either going to let the stars go off or we're going to, you know, shut them down and live with the results. You can't have the stars go off for 40, 50 points and get 15 assists, which means everyone's going off. And that's kind of what happened on Saturday afternoon.
And I'll even take it a step further. Mouassau, kind of our Superman leader of this defense, you know, makes the big plays against Utah and makes every sure tackle. He missed a few tackles. Kane Medrano, the other linebacker, that fourth down conversion to Bucky Irving, that was completely on Medrano. So the whole linebacking unit was a mess, you know, on Saturday, which was tough to watch. And, you know, it's frustrating because two of those three guys you mentioned are pass rushers. And, you know, Carl Jones Jr., Latu, that's what we think of them. They're outside linebackers technically, but they're more that Von Miller role where they're coming off the edge, they're bringing pressure. And I just want to give credit where it's due. That Oregon offensive line was as dominant as I've ever seen an O-line, probably since the heyday of those USC teams, where all five of those offensive linemen for Matt Leinart and Bush played at the next level in the NFL. Jeff Schwartz, the offensive line guru on Twitter, posted a compilation video of this O-line just pushing back this Bruins front seven. It was embarrassing. And to give you context on what happened, Mo Ostling led the team with 17 tackles, who's a safety. That is not an accident. They were getting 7-8 yards a carry, and Ostling would have to come up and make those stops because they were getting that manhandled at the line of scrimmage and beyond. It was an outstanding performance. I got to give credit where it's due. The Oregon offensive line was sensational, to say the least. But the kind of the guy I want to segue into, Bo Nix. I mean, we had all this talk about Bo Nix. I mean, we saw the Georgia game opening week, same old Bo Nix. This guy sucks. Like, I think that was kind of the mantra. Since that game, 17 touchdowns to only one interception, has lit up the Pac-12. Has been outstanding. He had that beautiful deep ball to Troy Franklin that Kirkwood unfortunately got beat on. Bo Nix, I got to give credit where it's due. This guy has turned himself into a legitimate Heisman candidate, and they had some side-by-side comparisons between his stats and Marcus Mariota's stats the year that he won the Heisman. And I got to say, Nix has him in the rushing, 8 touchdowns to 3, more rushing yards on the ground than Mariota, who's a true dual-threat quarterback, and he's just behind him a little bit on the passing touchdowns. Give me your take on Nix, because I came away as a skeptic, and he's converting atheists to believers is what he did. I'm a believer in Bo Nix after seeing what I saw on Saturday.
Will, he definitely had elements to his game that either folks didn't realize that he had or that were mitigated in the SEC. It has to be one or the other. And I think Brock Huard said it best on the Fox telecast as well, that pregame – and during halftime of that game in the Oregon box, all of the NFL scouts that came to watch this game and see NFL talent on both sides came away saying, we've never seen Bo Nix play like that. And we didn't know that Bo Nix had all of this ability, specifically in terms of being able to make all of the throws that he did. Obviously, that deep ball was special. It was that back shoulder to Franklin in the crowd. He also hit some lasers on the outside in the red zone to solidify those drives. Will, he's playing absolutely exceptional, but I think he's also playing exceptional because of that offensive line that you speak of. He hasn't been sacked yet this season. Oregon's only given up one sack, and they gave it up in garbage time of one of their earlier games. So when you haven't been touched all season, it allows you to step into those throws, have confidence, be able to go through more progressions when you know you have that time. And even on that deep ball to Troy Franklin, you could see it, Will, that play action on that read option. The whole UCLA linebacking core got sucked into the box, and it was a track meet on the outside. And, Bo, I mean, it was a beautiful throw. Brock Huard called it a drop from heaven, you know, in those Oregon clouds. It was absolutely a sensational play. He played absolutely phenomenally. And credit where credit is due, Bo Nix right now is all Pac-12 first team at the quarterback position. There's no other way to slice it. And for all the talk, Will, I know we're LA Football Network, we're West Coast, but this may be a feather in the SEC's cap because you have a guy who struggled as much as he did and struggled pretty mightily against SEC competition. And he comes over to, because I have a hard time believing that he learned how to make these throws this year. I think this is something he was always capable of. He comes over to the Pac-12 in a right situation and is setting the entire conference on fire as arguably their offensive player of the year. And so I think it speaks a little bit to the depth of talent down south out there. And even though there is a West Coast bias, oftentimes, you know, the hype that that conference gets is justified.
Justified it is. And I'm just running through the stats with Bo Nix. The highest completion percentage he had was his last year at Auburn, 61% within the SEC. He is 71.5% on the season, a 10% jump. That is insanity, you know, coming from that area. 17 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And you saw how he performed against a Georgia defense. Granted, one of the best in the country. He was miserable. He was not great in that game. I think anyone would say that. They lost 49-3. But the difference he's made coming to the Pac-12 and just the field opening up, you know, I still would struggle with selecting him, I think, at the next level, just because the SEC is the closest you can get to an NFL environment. And he really did not light it up in that place. But, man, for the Pac-12, he has been an outstanding star. And we got to give justified due to Bo Nix and his performance, especially this past weekend against our Bruins. Next segment, Madman. Game balls. There was a lot of negatives out there, but we still have some positives for UCLA fans. As always, I'm going to let my guy to my right kind of let this thing go. Madman, first game ball, you get the honors.
Well, thank you so much, Will. And it has to start with the one individual who I believe had an AA-plus game for UCLA on both sides of the ball. The individual that is going to be a holy terror at the next level at the NFL. An individual who our friend, former guest, Brentley Weissman, has finally come around as a believer, and that is Zach Charbonnet. The 20 carries, the 151 yards. He was absolutely sensational in that game. And everything that UCLA did offensively was predicated off of Charbonnet being great in the run game, ran through that Oregon defensive line, was able to bounce runs out to the outside with his beautiful feet, finished those runs, you know, 20 carries, 151 yards. He caught balls out of the backfield. He's just such a special individual. I was talking earlier today with founder Ryan Dyrud of the LA Football Network, and Will, you and I have had similar conversations. He is the most NFL-ready, NFL-talented type of back that UCLA has had since, I would argue, Gaston Green, which was almost 30 years ago. Absolutely special, and so everything has to start with him. And I think even in a losing effort, he clearly showed he was the best back in the Pac-12. He is one of, if not the best backs in the entire country. I believe he's the best back in the entire country. And even in a loss, I think he did nothing but enhance his resume for the 2022 Doak Walker Award.
Oh, I could not agree anymore. And coming into this game, Oregon had the number one rush defense in the Pac-12. So I think people who follow the Doak Walker Award, vote for the Doak Walker Award. This was a game for Zach Charbonnet haters and people that believed in him. And boy, did he deliver, man. I mean, 20 carries, 151 yards, and a touchdown. He came into this game averaging 7.1 yards a carry in competition. He actually raised his rate against the number one Pac-12 rushing defense at 7.6. The run that he had at the beginning of the third quarter where he cut it outside, it was a 33-yard gain, and there's three guys on his back dragging the pile. And I, you know, happened to be Barney's Beanery with a bunch of UCLA fans, and the whole place stood up. They're like, go, go, keep going. And he was just churning, and he churned out an extra 10 yards off this run. And it's just the superhuman strength he can provide. It's how quick he is in and out of his cuts. For such a big guy, the feet, the footwork is incredible, how he's able to just cut outside, make quick cuts in and out. I have never seen a back like this, you know, and I will stand on the table. You know this. Zach Charbonnet is probably going to be my number one running back going to the NFL next year. That's not biased. I think Bijan Robinson is great, but find me another running back that can do what Zach Charbonnet can do with the rock in his hands. And he did it against an all-time defense. So Zach Charbonnet is a hell of a first pick and very well-deserving. Madman, second game ball. I think this is going to be a pick that I don't think would be expected, maybe the first pick, but I do want to give just due. When we did our preseason rankings for best defensive lines and best linebacking crews, Oregon was number one in both of those. And this offensive line was such a worry coming into this season. I mean, we saw the opening game against Bowling Green. We're going, man, DTR is going to have to run for his life like he did on that 66-yard touchdown run just to be able to generate some offense. New offensive line coach Tim Drevno in. We lost Justin Fry to Ohio State. A lot of chaotic things going on. And to our credit, the offensive line was spectacular against Oregon this weekend. We're talking about zero sacks allowed and just one QB hurry against the likes of DJ Johnson, against the likes of Brandon Dorlus, a lot of guys that are going to be playing at the next level. You know, the front seven is very talented there. Justin Flo, you know, one of the former number one overall recruit in California, spurned USC and UCLA to go up there. Didn't even allow a pressure on Justin Flo and these guys. So this offensive line, which was a worry coming into this season and was, you know, through the first couple of weeks, they have outstandingly produced, and I do want to give them their just due with my first game ball being the O-line. Madman, give me your thoughts on the UCLA O-line getting the game ball number two.
They were absolutely terrific, Will. I couldn't agree with you more. And again, this really wasn't an issue with the offense. I mean, you know, UCLA was able to move the ball up and down. There were a couple of unfortunate situations, especially on that opening drive, the holding that brought the touchdown back. There were a couple other slight moments, but DTR had the time to survey the field, look for his options. There was tremendous flow, that swing pass out to Keegan Jones for 36 yards. And, you know, Keegan Jones showing off that 200 meter track speed. Those are, that read on the far side of the field can't happen unless your offensive line pass protection is elite. And it certainly was elite all day long. It was just a matter of Oregon doubling up at times the number of possessions in the game after that onside kick and UCLA's inability to convert some third downs in the Oregon territory by no reason of the offensive line. Offensive line was absolutely sensational, and I completely agree with you in that assessment, Will. They certainly deserve a game ball.
Game ball number two to the O-line. Now it goes back to my guy, Madman. The third game ball.
Third game ball thriller. I'm going to go a little bit outside of the box here, but I have to give it to Nicholas Barmira. You know, 3 for 3 field goals. And I thought that the special teams outside of the onside kick did a really excellent job. Barmira in particular, 2 40-plus yard field goals, tough weather conditions at times. It was windy. And his kicks kept UCLA in the game. Now, there's some arguments over whether UCLA should have gone for it on some of those fourth downs. But in looking back at the film, Will, you know, one was a 4th and 9 at the 16. Another one was a 4th and 10 inside the Oregon 35. They're just the down and distance was just not favorable for UCLA to go for it with their style of offense and that flow of the game. And Barmira really rewarded Chip Kelly's confidence in him really exceptionally well, especially early in that game when it was kind of going shot for shot. And so Barmira obviously hit the game winner, kept his nerve against South Alabama, and had a terrific game. You wish we didn't kick as many field goals, especially with the way the defense played, but he was 3 for 3 and did an outstanding job. So this is an opportunity for Nicholas Barmira and to get some praise. And we're going to need him down the stretch. You know, that SC game and a possible Pac-12 title game, there's going to be a kick or two or three that's going to be really significant in swinging situationally what those big games are going to be like. So having him in rhythm is really important, and he did a great job.
And another guy that we were concerned with, you know, coming into the season, you know, has the block punt against Bowling Green, misses 2 field goals and an extra point against Bowling Green. We're going, holy shit, we don't got an offensive line and a kicker. This is going to be a little tough for us moving forward. The script is flipped on both of those situations. So it has been beautiful to watch. Development of Nicholas Barmira, a guy that won Pac-12, you know, special teams player of the week, and, you know, hit those kicks in the rain, you know, in Oregon, which was tougher than a lot of different situations. And, you know, it never rains in California, but you can't tell that to Nicholas Barmira because he was not through. Second game ball for myself, Madman. I'm going with the kid, Jake Bobo. You know, just a special, special talent. And, you know, the first half, just – a quintessential Jake Bobo half. Let me tell you, my theory is he's only to make massive catches. He can only make big catches in big situations. Can't make the average catches. So three catches in the first half, one on fourth and seven, one on fourth and five, and the one-handed catch he made where he pinned it to the helmet a la David Tyree in the Super Bowl, pulling it down. And then he finished the game with eight catches, 108 yards, and a touchdown. I almost feel like we're not going to Bobo enough, you know, in a lot of ways, because in that game, it's starting to get out of hand. You know, we're down, you know, two scores at the end of the first half. We got to get it to Bobo more. And we did at the end of the game. We're moving the football. But I know DTR has his approach, and he likes to get everyone involved. He peppers it around, to use your term. But I think with just how talented a guy we have in Bobo, just give him the ball. I'm going to give a kicking and screaming reference, you know, from Will Ferrell. Pass the ball to the Italians. That was his one play call. He has the two Italian kids come out for his soccer team. Their one play was pass the ball to the Italians. If it's not, hand it off to Charbonnet or pass to Bobo, we may be missing the belt here. What do you think about that with Bobo at number two?
Will, I really liked your selection and your rationale, because it's actually the reason why I didn't have him in my top two, because I felt like a lot of his yards were empty yards in the game, where five of his eight catches and 60 plus of his 100 plus yards were really in that fourth quarter where the game was already out of hand. And it felt like Oregon was playing some prevent style defense there to really have UCLA chew the clock while moving the ball down the field. And I don't think it has anything to do with Jake Bobo's ability. Again, he's absolutely phenomenal at 6'5", that body, that frame, his hands, his ability to get open. And I think what's happened a little bit is that we treat him so much like the ultimate security blanket, third down, fourth down, we know we're going to him, that we're not giving him enough touches in these non-extreme pressure situations. And I think what we've seen the last couple of weeks, Will, is obviously an effort to get Charbonnet the ball, rightfully so. And then it's been, if you've noticed, a lot of emphasis on getting the ball to Kaz Allen on the outside early to sort of be able to set the edge, to set some horizontal movement, to then be able to kind of stretch it vertically. And I think that's an opportunity where Chip is going to say, okay, going into November, we actually really need to have a package or two earlier in the game to just get Bobo going, because he doesn't just need to be this third down, fourth down specialist. He's clearly the best receiver on the team. He's wide receiver number one, another NFL future on hand for sure. But let's get him the ball more. And, you know, Bobo needs, I personally believe, in order for UCLA to beat USC and to win the rematch potentially against Oregon, Bobo's going to need 10 plus catches. Bobo's going to need to be what Troy Franklin was at Oregon, how USC thinks about Addison. It's going to need to be shot for shot in that regard. Bobo can't just be the three or four third and fourth down guy to keep these drives going. So I completely agree with you. He was terrific. I wish, though, he got some of those stats earlier in the game when it meant more, where the outcome was still in question. And I think some of those drives that ended up in field goals could have very easily ended up in touchdowns if there was more of an emphasis on Bobo earlier in the game.
And that's what I would say too, is like, from a receiver standpoint, you can only catch the balls that are thrown your way.
Exactly. So
three catches in the first half, all huge ones. And to kind of compare it to how they used Greg Dulcich last year, our whole thing was just feed the ball to Dulcich. You can't stop this guy. It's very similar to Bobo. You know, Chip, he has his methods, and it's hard to call him wrong because the offense clearly moves the ball as well as anybody in the country right now. But you'd love to see just kind of a pass-happy system to Bobo, like a la Marquise Lee on those USC teams. I'd love to see, 170 targets to Jake Bobo or something like that, because I know the guy could crush it with this. I mean, we've seen it. Chip kind of saves him for the big moments, the big plays. But let's make every play the big play. Why not give it to our guy Bobo? So that's game ball number two. Madman, you're down to your last one. I'm interested to see where you're going with. Not a lot of bright spots, but, I think there's some guys you can talk me into.
Thriller, I mean, I got to go here with Mo Ostling, our man. I mean, obviously, it was a tough day. But anytime you're in the secondary and you find a way to get 17 tackles, I mean, it's kudos to you. It's a disastrous signal for your chances to win the game. And we love Bo Ostling. He's terrific. He's interacted with LAFB a bunch over the years. We love him to death. We never want to see Mo Osling get a game ball because of his number of tackles. I assure you that. I want to see the picks, the sacks, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, touchdowns, all of that fair game, Mo. But the fact that we're putting him on here with the 17 tackles kind of tells you the defensive day. But honestly, Will, if it wasn't for Mo Osling, things could have been even worse, as hard as that is to believe. And by worse, it just would have meant that Oregon would have scored quicker, you know, and maybe had a shot at 70, you know. But Mo Osling, at least he's going to need a spa over the next couple of days to kind of get that body right for Stanford after 17 tackles. But what I really appreciated about him was his willingness to stick his nose in there, not be scared. It didn't matter if it was Whittingham or Irving or Nix or Franklin or any of their tight ends. He stuck his nose in there, and that takes a lot of heart, but it also takes great technique because it's, you know, tackling a 6'5" tight end versus trying to tackle a Bucky Irving. Those are two very different animals. And the fact that Mo Osling was able to do it effectively, didn't have really any missed tackles, and was able to do that so well, the game ball goes to Mo.
Love it. And Mo Osling, you know, it was almost like Oregon, how dominant they were. It looked like they were like fighting a guy with his hands tied behind his back. That front seven, it was brutal. But Mo Osling came in every play, and he was laying the wood on some of those hits. So got a lot of love for our guy, Mo. Final game ball. A lot of different ways we can go here. But the guy that I really think deserves this spot, and it's not even his performance, but it's what he does with the football in his hands in the typical play call. So I'm not going to give it to a particular guy, but I'm going to give it to a particular play call. The screen passes to Keegan Jones have worked this year. That is the one area he has been able to expose defenses. And once he gets out in the open field, that guy can fly. A 45-yard touchdown against Oregon, had a 56-yarder, you know, against Bowling Green, I think, in the opening game. Keegan Jones, you know, he had that fumble against Washington, but it's nice just to have a change of the pace back like that where you can plug him in and you can call plays for him and know it's going to go for a huge gain. So Keegan Jones, that particular play call, the screen pass, and Dorian Thompson-Robbins, to his credit, has always been thought of as a one-read quarterback. He was so calm and composed and made an NFL decision on that play where he surveyed the field, nothing was there, saw Jones in the flat, dumped it to him. Jones carries it for the rest, 45 yards, touchdown. So for me, that play as a whole deserves a game ball because you see the growth of Dorian Thompson-Robinson. You see the growth of Keegan Jones. Keegan Jones is an absolute threat out there on the football field for a guy that we really doubted as RB2 coming in the year. So Keegan Jones, final game ball. Madman, any final thoughts, you know, as we head into Stanford this week, which should be a fun game?
Yeah, Will, I'll just double-click briefly on Keegan Jones, and you're absolutely spot on. And that play is becoming so effective that there's starting to be a read in and of itself there. And, you know, usually you think of the check down, the security blanket there on the outside, take what you can get. But DTR is starting to notice when Keegan Jones goes out in that flat, what is his position relative to that outside backer? And if they're sort of level and you can sort of draw a straight line between the two of them, just toss it out to him because he is just with that 200 meter track speed, he's just going to run around any linebacker. It's no chance. And so I think DTR now understands between, as you said, what he did at Bowling Green, now with Oregon and some of the other plays over the course of the season. He also had a lovely hurdle that he hurdled no one. He hurdled the air, but it was very graceful en route to a first down. It was outstanding. But DTR is starting to realize when those things are level between his positioning and that outside backer, that's going to be at least a 25-yard play given Keegan Jones' speed and his ability to get to the outside. And again, we have to think about the war, not just the battle. That's going to be a significant play down the road against USC. Down the road in a possible Pac-12 title game, having that additional weapon, additional dimension could be all the difference in some of these competitive games moving forward. Thriller, I'll just close with this. Excited about Stanford. Really excited to see DTR reset a little bit mentally and how he is going to now approach. We just had a 9-game winning streak. We had a blip on the radar. Now the next winning streak begins. Because for all of how well he has played in 2022. I saw some behaviors, Will, where he reverted back to early season DTR and DTR of 2021. Even that first drive, he threw some balls in traffic that he shouldn't have in the end zone, got a little loose with it at the end, naturally had to because of the deficit. But how does he now rein it back in, rein back his emotions, his focus, his intensity, his preparation, and harnesses it the right way to start a new winning streak? That's what I'm really excited to see against Stanford Saturday night.
And I'll be at the Rose Bowl. We're going to try to do a little thing pregame with some of the fans out in the parking lot. Got a Stanford preview coming to you with the SI Stanford guy, Kevin Borba, and former Stanford defensive tackle Jordan Watkins going to be joining us as well. So a very fun Stanford preview coming to you this week. Madman, as always, thank you for joining me, brother. Bruins, as my man alluded to, we lost the battle, but the war is still very much up in the air. Let's get our Bruins to those heights that we want to see. Let's pack the Rose Bowl, as I said earlier, and make it a fun, fun game. Bruin Bible, we are officially out.